This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Let's talk books. Sure, lots of people talk about reading on the beach in summertime, and they say they make sure to tuck a book into the beach bag. But some of us feel that the very best time to curl up with a book is late fall and winter. Come on, who can resist a fireplace, a cup of something warm, and a good book as the temperature slides south? So with that in mind, we thought we'd get some suggestions for your cold weather reading list and help you discover or revisit some Michigan authors. So for that expert guidance, we turn to poet and writer Keith Taylor. He coordinates the undergraduate program in creative writing at the University of Michigan, and he directs the Bear River Writers Conference, and he's the poetry editor for Michigan Quarterly Review, and he joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Keith.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Do you think I have something up there that there's just a magical time about reading in the winter and, you know, the fireplace might be on and
absolutely. And I was thinking this time it's people reading on an electronic reader in front of a fake screen fireplace, you know, drinking Red Bull or something. The world may have changed, but the aesthetic stays the same.
We still love to fall into
a good
book. So we asked you to pick some good suggestions for our wintertime reading. So what have you brought us?
Well, I've brought three books, and I was thinking, you know, people have different tastes for winter reading. I think there are many people who want to go to some place far away and exotic with palm trees and warm winter breezes. And then there are the others who just want to disappear in big stories.
Yes,
This winter after the movie, how many people are going to read or reread Anna Karenina?
Yes.
And they'll disappear for a month.
Absolutely.
6 weeks. You know, they'll come back and their family will look like foreigners. I have to admit, since I'm, you know, a northerner and in cold weather, I like to read about cold. You know, I like to read about snow. And Michigan authors, not surprisingly, have been good about writing about snow and cold and winter. I thought about, you know, Jim Harrison, of course. But Jim Harrison, well, you know, he gets a lot of attention. And he doesn't need our help. People are going to read him anyway, although he writes wonderfully about winter in many of his books and in many of his poems.
Sure.
So I picked three, you know, varying reputations.
Okay.
The first one I want to talk about is a guy named John Smolens, who teaches up at Northern Michigan University.
So he knows about winter.
He knows about winter. He knows. And he writes about winter almost all the time. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about a book of his called Cold and give you a sample of it.
Yes,
seems
please.
Like a good place to start,
Let's
right?
Let's do it.
A novel called Cold. You might call it a crime novel, although I think, you know, the crimes are kind of off stage and they're kind of subdued. So it's a little bit different than a crime novel. It starts out a woman living alone in the woods, a potter living alone in the woods. Her husband and daughter have died in a terrible car accident on a snowy road. And she's living way off by herself, and she looks out her window in a blizzard just as night is falling, and she sees a man standing alone at the edge of the forest.
Okay.
She's not terrified. She pulls out her husband's gun and invites the man in. and thus begins the story, which goes on, and it's a complicated story. And, of course, when you talk about these books, you never want to give too much of
No, you don't. Away, you know, no.
Ruin things for people. But he's an escaped prisoner. He's a trustee who's walked away in a blizzard from Marquette Prison. And he's going to find his family and maybe try to either escape or clear himself. You know, if you're walking away in the UP, you're thinking you're going to go to Canada, which, of course, is where everybody's going to look for him. He does get together with his former lover, and as she's thinking about where they're going to go, she says kind of in a nice way, how hard it is to get out of Michigan. It's big and surrounded mostly by water. So it's like they're stuck. They're stuck in the UP. But there are some wonderful descriptions of winter, and as the plot unfolds, they move around. Here they go to I just want to read you a little paragraph where they go to a lodge up north of Marquette, up toward the Huron Mountains up there in central UP. The snow continues to fall. The snow falls throughout this book. It falls constantly in this book, which I love. So here's when they arrive. When they reached the trees, they could see the lodge, a long log cabin with a steep pitched roof. Below the lodge, a narrow river wound through marshlands, snow covered in most places, though at one bend the ice had given way, revealing black water. On the far side of the river stood a wall of birch and pines, their branches heavy with snow. The ridge commanded a view of steep, forested hills in every direction, except several miles to the east, where the broad blue plain of Lake Superior seemed to rise up to meet the sky.
Gorgeous.
So, yeah, the winter.
Gorgeous.
And,
you just see it.
You know, Smolin's, I mean, he writes about winter. Another one of his books is called Winter by Degrees, which I recommend. So it's, you know, but again, that's got to be the kind of personality that's sitting inside by that warm fire.
Yes.
Wants to read about the cold. And I'm that personality. It sounds like you might be.
I am too. That sounds very, very good.
It's from 2001.
Yeah.
It's in paperback now. It's still available.
Okay.
And it's a good read.
All right.
It's a good read.
So John Smolin's Cold is our first one.
Yep.
Next up.
Next up is this is a crime writer named Steve Hamilton. Have you run across him?
No, I have not.
Oh, he's fascinating. He actually lives in upstate New York. He writes, he was a student at U of M back in the day, won Hopwood Awards here. And he's gone off and he's been a professional writer for, one of those big companies up there in upstate New York. But he started this crime writing series. It all takes place in the eastern Upper Peninsula. He has a wonderful detective named Alex McKnight. Alex McKnight is a Detroit cop who got shot in the line of duty and has a bullet lodged in by his heart. So he's got to get away from Detroit, or he's got to quit work, and he gets away. And where does he go? He buys a cabin on Whitefish Point, up just north of the little town of Paradise. And he's going to live his life out there, and he's not going to be bothered by things.
But
of course, once a cop, always a cop. The crimes seem to follow him. Steve's done several of these books now. If you get a chance to talk to him sometime, I think you should. He's a wonderful
And
creator.
Alex McKnight is his...
Alex McKnight appears in almost all of his books.
But you can pick one. They're not a series, so you don't have...
independent.
There you go.
The one I want to talk about is the first one, where he invented the character. And this is, I think the book was originally published in 98 or 99. It's called A Cold Day in Paradise. There can't be any listeners who don't know that we have a Paradise, Michigan. But if there are, they should go check it out. It's a wonderful little town way up there. So Alex McKnight is up there, and he's basically become a curmudgeon. He goes into town to have his Canadian beers and talk to the bartender all through winter. But interestingly enough, the crimes he's working on in Detroit start following him, and he can't quite figure it out. Somebody is trying to recreate the things he worked on in the city in the eastern UP. The book, A Cold Day in Paradise, works through this as he's trying to figure out why this is and what's happening. So like a crime writer, it's most like all good crime writers, it's mostly character plot and character driven.
Okay.
When there is sort of landscape touches, they're just quick little brush strokes. You don't spend a lot of time dealing with that. And of course, dialogue. The dialogue's great. And the Michigan crime writers have been great. Steve won an Edgar Award for this book, which is the award best first novel, which is the big award given for crime writing. Our famous Elmore Leonard, of course, he's famous for the way he makes people talk.
His dialogue.
That's amazing.
Can you give us a sample?
Absolutely.
Good.
Although the piece I have. Yeah. Is not dialogue.
Okay.
The piece I have is just a little bit of these brush strokes, and it gives you a little sense. Again, got to find a place that can give you this and is not going to give away too much of the plot, because I do want people to read this book. This is a wonderful winter read. Starts in October, moves through Halloween, up into Thanksgiving, and into the edge of winter.
Right now is the time
right
to read
now,
this book, isn't
this
it?
This is the gray Michigan early winter, late fall. So this is Steve Hamilton. At the window, I could see that the rain had let up into a steady drizzle, but the wind was still howling, and it kept whipping up the surface of the lake. I could see the waves crashing on the rocky shoreline below the house. It wasn't even a lake anymore, not on a day like this. It was a sea, the kind of sea that wrecks ships and pulls men to their deaths. And now Edwin was out there, somewhere at the bottom of all that cold water.
I love it. Okay, I'm not familiar with him, but I'm going to get this.
No, he's a lot of fun. When I knew I was going to talk about this book, I was looking for all my Steve Hamilton, and I realized I'd given them all away. So I had to go out and find another copy of the book. And I don't give my books away. I covet my books. You know, I fill my house with them.
I understand that. So that's Steve Hamilton, and that particular one was called
A Cold Day in Paradise.
All right.
And he's got another one since. since then. But the last one I read was one called Misery Bay, which is about a bay over where the Keweenaw Peninsula comes down. And it's needless to say, there's a body hanging from a tree. That's how the novel starts.
Sounds like there should be somebody smart jumping on these for movie options.
And I bet you I would be willing to bet that that's going to happen.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That good.
And with mysteries, when they have all that great dialogue, it's so easy to adapt them to movies because these writers think of them in these terms of scene and people talking. And it's why Elmore Leonard's books have made such great movies.
Yes.
Yeah, and they really have.
Now we move on.
Well, this one's a little bit different. This one's gotten a little more attention recently. This is Bonnie Jo Campbell's most recent novel called Once Upon a River.
And tell us a little about Bonnie Jo.
Bonnie Jo, isn't Bonnie Jo great? Bonnie Jo has done a lot of things over the years. She grew up in rural southwestern Michigan, I think on the banks of the St. Joe River, actually. She was the smart girl, of course, and she'd never tell you this herself. Mm-hmm. I hope you get to interview her sometime soon.
So you can brag on her.
She went off to the University of Chicago and did a degree in philosophy. Big, prestigious university, difficult degree.
Yeah.
She did it. She came back to Michigan. She was going to do a PhD in mathematics at Western. While there, she decided that she had to take a break from, you know, PhD in mathematics. I can't even imagine what that must be
like. I can't either. So she took a break
She took a break from her PhD, and she took a writing class with the novelist Jamie Gordon, who won the National Book Award last year, is also a wonderful writer. And she got hooked with writing. And Jamie, of course, recognized her brilliance right away. So Bonnie Jo dropped her PhD and did a Master of Fine Arts in Fiction. So Once Upon a River is a kind of – it takes place, I think, in the early 80s on a fictional river that's a tributary of the Kalamazoo River.
Okay.
I was talking to her about this a year or so ago, and I said, why the early 80s? And she said, I wanted a time that seemed contemporary but was just before cell phones.
Very good.
So not all – she didn't want the characters distracted by all that stuff.
And it lets you, I'm sure, as a writer, develop things in a purer way where one cell phone call could blow the whole
thing. Exactly, exactly. And these are about poor people.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, everybody's got cell phones now. I mean, all over the world.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, should I buy food or a cell phone? Oh,
mm-hmm,
I'll buy a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't want that distraction because she wanted to – and you can see from the title, Once Upon a River, it has that sort of fairy tale feel to it, Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And a river, of course, in America, what do we think of? We think of Huck Finn. We think of all the great On the Road novels. She connects with that. So she creates this kind of American myth. She has a great character, female character named Margot Crane.
Young girl.
Young girl. Starts out very young. Yes, yes. You've read this book.
I'm actually in the middle of it.
Are you really? Good for you.
I didn't know you were going to bring this one up.
That's right. That's right. It almost seems as if we planned it.
Yes.
And she starts out quite young. I mean, I think she's 16. Her father ends up dead. She ends up hiding from the people on the river. She moves up and down this river. And again, you don't want to give too much
away.
No.
But
she's a strong character, very much her own person, very self-contained. So she moves up and down. She has some lovers. She has people who take care of her. She gets out again. And the interesting thing about this book, although it covers several years, it moves toward winter. Now, you're not there yet.
No.
But the resolution of this book is in winter.
Okay.
On Kalamazoo, on a very cold and
and
drizzly, snowy, ice-filled Kalamazoo River. It's really interesting that Bonnie Jo goes there and where she gets to in this place. It's a little – I try to pick a place that's not going to give away plot ideas. But this is right at the end of the book. And
okay.
This is
but after, no spoiler alerts here because
I don't need to give them because the major information you're not going to get.
Okay.
But so this girl has worked hard. She's had a tough life.
Mm-hmm.
She's moved through this Michigan landscape. She's moved through our battered economy. She's moved through our small town. She's had people disdain her. She's been abandoned by her mother, but she's found a way to live, and she's found a small, very small group of friends. She's down. She's on the Kalamazoo River. Some terrible things have happened, and she's wandering back to her home. What's her home now? In a snowstorm, and she stumbles. She stumbles in the snow in a field. She pressed her cheek against the snow, felt the snow compress and melt slightly. Snow began to accumulate on her other cheek. She would lie there for a moment until she was rested, until she understood what had happened this morning and what had happened in her life. Her obligations had been met, and she was free, more free than she had ever been. Within minutes, she was hardly feeling the cold. If she could return to her boat, she would start a fire to thaw herself out, or else she would remain right here, at rest. So it's a little bit scary, of course. You know, the snow is there. The snow is, you know, what is that rest lying in the snow mean? Well, we know what it means.
Yeah,
you know, she's not going to get up.
Forever, yes.
Right. But on the other hand, this girl's been through a lot.
It's earthy and gritty, the part where I'm at this point.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a very earthy and very gritty.
Very gritty book. It is indeed. It is indeed. It's fun to teach this book to undergraduates. They all sort of raise their eyebrows. It's like, whoa. And you didn't think, 20-year-olds could be shocked. But, interestingly enough, you can still shock them with a book.
I can only imagine some of your finicky germaphobe young ladies, because my daughter and her friends would be among them going, oh, she did what?
She did that?
To that deer? No.
Exactly, exactly,
but
yeah.
This is a young lady who is at home in the woods and
Absolutely.
At home with nature in a way that I bet it's a real revelation for kids today.
It is, and it is indeed. And the fact that and they sometimes are a little bit skeptical about this.
Yeah.
And they don't quite realize that people can and do actually still live like this in our state.
Closer to nature, still
depend on wild food. This is real people doing real things.
Huh.
And it's interesting that Bonnie Jo's affections are so clearly with these people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the strength of her book, and that's what makes the stuff interesting, because she really cares about these people and she knows our landscape. The class that I teach this book in is a class on environmental writing.
Oh.
So I use this book as an example of landscape writing and environment writing, even though it's got a rich character and really a really fascinating storyline.
And this book, again, is Bonnie Jo Campbell.
Once Upon a River.
These are all Michigan writers who have found different paths to pursue what's inside of them and are successful at it.
They are, yeah. All of these people are doing quite well. Steve and Bonnie Jo, I think, are both living off their writing now. John still has a day job at the university. But they're three examples of fiction writers, in our state right now doing things using the state. And we have a lot. I mean, we have a rich writing culture in our state. And there's a lot of people to talk to. And there's a lot of people who've written about who fit my definition of a good winter read. But these were the three that first occurred to me when you asked me to talk about this. And I'm very fond of all of them.
Writer and poet Keith Taylor, thank you for sharing your winter reading list with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we will put links to all of these books on our webpage at michiganradio.org. Here at Stateside, we love hearing from you, and it's easy to get in touch with us. Go to Facebook and search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty. That's Canty. And on Twitter at Stateside Radio. Stateside's executive producer is Zoe Clark. Stateside is engineered by Bob Scon. Contributors are Ellie Billings, Ellen Cortezoa, Emily Fox, Cameron Stewart, and Mercedes Mejia. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving Day to you and yours, and we'll be back with you at 3 o'clock on Monday.